421 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a new Comic Wednesday episode for July 25th, 2018. First of all, apologies. I know that the last couple days haven't had episodes out in a timely manner. And we also kind of missed the Friday of Comic-Con, didn't release an episode that day either. We do like to release episodes every day, but as you can imagine, Comic-Con is a super hectic time. I tried to get as much done and scheduled to be released before Comic-Con, and I was pretty successful. But then a few things I thought were going to come through at Comic-Con didn't. Interviews I planned on releasing that I did at the show, just it didn't pan out. Didn't have a lot of time to produce episodes while I was there. So apologies for that. We're getting back on schedule here, and there's a lot of content to come from San Diego Comic-Con, so be sure you're paying attention over the next few days, because there's going to be tons of interviews with some really great creators like Mark Brooks, Joe Jusco, I'm totally drawing a blank right now, Dean Haspel, Chris Cantwell, just a whole lot of really great creators that I got a chance to talk to. So really appreciate everybody that took the time to talk to me at San Diego Comic-Con. And of course, we'll have our wrap-up episode talking about all the news to come out of Comic-Con this year coming up later this week as well. So on to the matter at hand. The first book I'm going to talk about that comes out tomorrow, or today, as you listen to this, tomorrow as I'm recording, is Flash 51, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Scott Collins, colors by Luis Guerrero. This is the Flash War epilogue. It's got a really cool cover, Last Race of Wally West, and it's basically Iris kind of giving her feelings about her nephew, and she kind of narrates the story, and it's basically exactly what it sounds like. The epilogue of Flash War, it's how Wally is kind of dealing with the fallout from that, and his missing wife and children, and kind of Iris and Barry trying to help him out. And in theory, it would be really emotional and impactful, but unfortunately, I think it falls just a little bit short. That's not to say it wasn't enjoyable. I did enjoy the issue, but both as a story and the impact that I felt, and art-wise, I think it just, there's something just a little bit off about it. I don't know that I can quite put my finger on it, but I think both narratively as a story and art-wise, I just think it's not as successful as it could have been. And I think Joshua Williamson is an incredibly talented writer. I think Scott Collins is a great penciler. But there are some pages that look spectacular, and there are other pages where things just look a little off. I don't know if Scott Collins is used to inking himself, but there isn't a separate inker on the book. So kind of like with Steve Rude on the Man of Steel issues, or the Man of Steel issue, I should say, that he did. I feel like he kind of suffered from not having an inker, and that might be the same case with Scott Collins. So, as I said, it was enjoyable. I'm not going to give away what happens to Wally in the issue, but it definitely leads to other events in the DC universe going forward. And I'm really curious to see where Flash goes from here, because Wally's kind of going to be off the table for a while. And he's been a part of the book for quite a while. For me, it just wasn't as good and as emotionally impactful as the Flash War itself, which I thought was spectacular. So still a solid issue. Still glad I read it. And the Flash is definitely a pretty big part of this overall story that's going on, that started with the DC Universe special from Geoff Johns. So we're going on over 2 years now since Rebirth started, so it'd be nice if we started to get some answers. That might not be till the end of Doomsday Clock, unfortunately, and with that on a bi-monthly schedule, Everything's kind of slowed down in a way. So let's move on to the next book I'm going to talk about, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, number 49. This is the penultimate issue of Robert Venditti's run, and it's built into one heck of a finish here. So Robert Venditti writing, we've got pencils by Rafa Sandoval and Sergio Davila, inks by Jordi Tarragona, and colors by Tameyu More. This is my book of the week. It was absolutely incredible. I loved the setup that Venditti had as far as putting John Stewart in an obvious place of leadership and you know, having a plan, and then everything kind of falling into place, and Hal Jordan being so central to the issue. Once again, showing why Hal Jordan is the greatest of all Green Lanterns. The art by Sandoval and Davila is spectacular. And I just loved it. I loved the way the things kind of fell into place. This kind of last-ditch effort of the Lanterns. And Venditti really showed his chops as an artist, or as a writer, rather, showing all these narratives that have been kind of weaving throughout his entire 50 issue run on Green Lantern. So I loved it. I'm very curious to see where the title goes from here. We know from the announcement at San Diego Comic-Con, it's going to be Grant Morrison and Liam Sharp on Green Lantern going forward. But we know we still have the Green Lanterns book from Dan Jurgens. So where are we going to get all of the greater roster of Green Lanterns? I mean, here in this particular issue, you know, we've got Arkillo from the Yellow Lanterns, and you know, Guy Gardner and John Stewart, Hal Jordan, Kyle Rayner, Kilowog, you know, all the characters we've come to know and love. So certainly don't want to see that go away. But I just don't know. I don't know what Grant Morrison's going to do. Longtime listeners of the podcast will know I'm not a particular fan of Grant Morrison, but I'm a huge fan of Liam Sharp. So I'm certainly going to give it a try. And from what I heard at San Diego, it was described as law and order in space. So no word on when you open the cover, you get the dun-dun sound effect of Law and Order. I would guess not, although that would be cool. But yeah, I'm just not sure what we're going to see. But in the meantime, Venditti's going out with a bang. It's over the top. It's bombastic. It's awesome the way he's brought the Dark Stars back, the Controllers back, made them part of kind of the cosmic corner of the Green Lanterns or the DC Universe again. And it just a spectacular issue, and I can't wait to see how he wraps it all up. All right, one more book from DC. It's Justice League Dark, written by James Tynan IV. We've got Alvaro Martinez Bueno on pencils, Raul Fernandez on inks, and Brad Anderson on colors. So if you guys remember back when I interviewed James Tynan at Phoenix Comic Con, what he has said then, what he told me, and what I've heard him say in several interviews since then, and panels and whatnot, is that he basically wants to make this the scariest book in the DC universe. Like, not the scariest Justice League book, but the scariest book. So basically, this spins out of DC Dark Knight's Metal and No Justice, Justice League No Justice, which followed that, and then the Justice League. We know the source wall is broken. We know things in the DC universe are out of whack. There's other forces, you know, like previously we had the Speed Force and the Emotional Spectrum. Now we're learning about these other forces like the Sage Force, the Strength Force, the Steel Force, STILL, as in not moving force. We've learned about Umbrax, this evil living universe that powers the ultraviolet spectrum. So there's a lot of moving pieces here. And what we learned in the first issue of Justice League Dark is that magic has been affected as well. It's kind of been turned on its head. It's turning on the wielders of magic in the DCU. Their spells are going haywire. And Wonder Woman's kind of tasked with figuring it out. So I don't want to spoil too much more than that because there's a lot of good here. And I do feel like Tynan has succeeded in giving us some sense of menace and some sense of threat. I expect the level of creepiness to increase exponentially as we start seeing more of the big bad that he's created. Saw some drawings, some renderings of the Upside Down Man while I was in San Diego at Comic-Con, and some images, that's the word I was searching for, and he's really creepy looking. I would definitely not want to run into him in a dark alley. So this book's also going to explore just how Wonder Woman ties into the magic corner of the DCU. And at San Diego, Tynan was asked the question about, you know, do we really need another Wonder Woman book, or is this just going to be another Wonder Woman book, from a fan who loved the Justice League Dark title previously, the New 52 one, with, you know, Zatanna and John Constantine and everything. And Tynan had an interesting comment about Constantine. He says to him, Constantine is the guy that shows up out of the dark, says three or four words that kind of solve your problem, or at least head you down the path to solving your problem, then says another sentence that basically cuts you to the quick, cuts your heart in eight pieces, I think he said, and then walks back out of the shadows. He's not somebody who plays well with others. And I think Tynan hit the nail on the head there. I don't think Constantine really belongs in a team book. Not to say he's not going to show up here from time to time. It sounds like he certainly will. But there are other creators or other characters who are going to be central to this book. Certainly Zatanna plays a big role in issue one. You know, Dr. Fate is going to show up in issue two. So, I was very pleased, very satisfied with the first issue. And I feel like, you know, Zatanna's never really been one of my favorites. And I have a feeling that after the way Tynan portrays her, that may turn around. Another thing that's interesting is just how much dialogue there is in this issue. You really get a lot of story. I never felt like, oh my God, this is taking forever to read, or oh my God, look at all these words. But just kind of, you know, skimming through it now, I see, yeah, there really is a lot of dialogue. And it's just a testament to the skill of James Tynan as a writer that until I'm actually, you know, scrolling through and scanning it and I notice how many word balloons there are, that I've actually noticed that this is a pretty dense read. Because while I was reading it, I was so caught up in the story, I didn't even realize. So really great job. I love that Man-Bat is here. Swamp Thing is also going to be a big character in this book going forward. So imagine we do see some other of the magic wielders of the DC universe here. Whether or not Deadman's going to join the team, Madame Xanadu, it's to be determined at this point. But we do have Man-Bat, Wonder Woman, Zatanna, and Swamp Thing by the end of this first issue, and I really can't wait for more. He really knocked it out of the park. The sense of menace, the sense of importance, very much similar to what we had in the first issue of the regular Justice League title. So kudos to Tynan. And the art is spectacular as well. I don't know that I've ever seen Martinez Bueno's art before, but man, it's spectacular. And great use of color also. I should mention that by Brad Anderson. It's somewhat of a darker book, which, you know, suits the magic. But the rendering, the fineness of line by Martinez Bueno is spectacular. Especially love the way he draws John Constantine. So, as I said, kudos to the whole creative team all around on that one. All right, up next, I'm going to mention Shanghai Red, number 2, from Image Comics. It's written by Christopher Sabella. Art is handled by Joshua Hickson. And I really think we can kind of consider both those guys the storytellers on this at this point, because I'm pretty sure they're crafting it together. And for those not familiar, the first issue was my book of the week when it came out, so I definitely wanted to follow up with issue 2. to see if they managed to keep kind of keep on a roll. And they really did. I really enjoyed this issue. For those not familiar, the term Shanghai, like how it's like traditionally used in the 1800s when this book is set, it was basically these guys who would get paid per person by going out and collecting like drunk people or people that were just out on the streets, hit them over the head, they'd drag them to this boat, a ship really, you know, sailing vessel, you know, whether a pirate ship or a cargo ship of some sort, and basically sell them to, you know, the captains, the crews of these ships for whatever the agreed upon price was. And when the person woke up the next morning, they're basically an indentured servant on this ship, right? There's no land to be seen and they're stuck there and they've got to work basically. They're kind of just pushed into slavery or indentured servitude, if you want to think of it that way. Like, okay, we'll get you back home and we'll feed you, but you're going to work for it. And that's kind of where the term Shanghai started. And that's what we saw in the first issue of this series. We meet a character who was Shanghai'd. And at the end of the first issue, spoilers if you haven't read it. Okay, at the end of the first issue, this person makes it back to Portland, where they're from, and wants revenge on the people that Shanghai'd them. So this issue picks up where that left off. I think that Hickson does a good job with the art, sufficiently kind of depressing and morose. And the story, the dialogue by Sabella is very well done. We get a few surprises in this issue, but it's also realistic, right? It's kind of this one guy against the world sort of story, but it's not like the one guy is some kind of superhero. Takes the lumps for sure in trying to get revenge on those that Shanghai'd him. So it's not a book for the faint of heart. It's pretty bloody. It's pretty gory. And it's definitely brutal. So I really do recommend it. It's been a really great couple of first issues. All right. The next book I'm going to talk about is from Oni Press. It's called The Long Con. It's from writers Dylan McConis and Ben Coleman, with art by E.A. Denick and colors by Victoria Roboto. So this is a really interesting story, really interesting comic. I saw it in one of the press releases for San Diego Comic-Con. They were talking about their debuting this. They had, I think Oni at their booth had like an exclusive cover for this. And it's strange. I'll just say that there's been some kind of catastrophic event at a city called Los Benoza, where there's this giant comic book convention every year, pop culture convention, and now there's like a fence around it with barbed wire, and everybody inside supposedly is dead, and it's like we don't know exactly what the disaster was. All we know is it kind of decimated this city. And so a reporter that was actually covering the convention that managed to escape is tasked in this issue with going back to check it out. And he discovers that, hey, there are still people alive, and they think all the rest of the outside world has been decimated. So the Long Con continues. It's basically the longest comic convention in history because it's been years. And, you know, 5 years this convention's been going on. People have been living somehow. We haven't learned how yet in this convention center. And they believe the outside world to be, you know, obliterated. And the outside world believes all the people at the convention perished. So it's definitely an interesting theory, and it's played for laughs. This is definitely a humor book, and the art kind of suits that. It's much more of a like a comic strip kind of style, much more of a arc of a cartoony style. I think The dialogue is handled very well by the artist. The art isn't super detailed, but again, I think that's purposeful. I think that's what they're going for as far as, you know, more cartoony style. So I wasn't sure what to expect, if it was going to be played for humor or if they're going to play it straight up. Clearly, it's being played for humor. And I have a feeling that the creators on this title are going to be kind of poking fun all along at the kind of the tropes and the archetypes that you see at cons. We got that already a little bit in the first issue. So I expect throughout the miniseries here, we'll be seeing archetypes and poking fun at archetypes both in the present time after the disaster has occurred, as well as flashing back to when our protagonist, the reporter, first showed up at the con. And he runs into a friend of his who actually got him the badge to the con, and she's talking about how you got to line up in this line to then get a chance to go line up in this other line, and how the whole convention is pretty much just standing in line. So that's a little too accurate to be funny in a way when it comes to talking about San Diego Comic-Con. But I enjoyed the first issue. I'll definitely be following up with issue two when it comes out. So that does it for the books that I wanted to cover in depth this time. There are actually a lot of really, really good books coming out this week, a lot of them from DC, and I didn't want to go too DC heavy. Plus, the Aftershock books, there's three really good Aftershock books that are coming out this week. So listen to Aftershock Monday this week to get the scoop on those. And then we also have Harbinger Wars 2, number 3, coming out from Valiant. And we didn't want to talk about that here because we wanted to wait until the next Valiant Sunday when we could talk about it more in detail and get all spoilery after you guys have had almost a week to read it, as opposed to kind of ruining it for everybody on the first day that it comes out. So let me go ahead and run down some of the other titles that are coming out today so you'll know what to look for when you get to your comic shop. So as I mentioned, the three Aftershock titles that I talked about on Aftershock Monday this last week, Brothers Dracul number 4 from Cullen Bunn and Mirko Kolak. We've got Pestilence, Story of Satan from Frank Thierry and Oleg Okunev, I think is how you say his last name. And then we've got Walk Through Hell from Garth Ennis, which is super creepy. Over at Boom, I want to mention also from Cullen Bunn, Bone Parish, number 1, with a cool cover by Lee Garbett. That one I can't wait to get my hands on it and check out. It's basically about, I'm not sure who does it, but somebody comes up with the idea or the ability to make a drug out of people's bones. This really addictive drug. So I can only imagine where that story is going to go when you put it in the hands of somebody who tells really creepy stories like Cullen Bunn. At DC, first I should mention at Dark Horse Comics, Blackwood number 3, Manny did an interview with, I think it's Andrew Fish and Veronica Fish at San Diego Comic-Con about Blackwood. And we're supposed to have that interview for you. I'm hoping that I'm going to get the file from Manny and be able to release it today, same day that issue 3 comes out. Over at DC, Action Comics 1001 was also a really, really great read that may have given Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps run for its money for Book of the Week, except I didn't want to talk about it on here because I'm saving it for Superman Sunday. Coming up this Sunday. Also, Detective Comics number 985 from Brian Edward Hill. Absolutely spectacular. So, so, so good. I'm just loving the fast pace, loving the take that Brian Edward Hill has on Batman. Hoping he gets to do more. It was announced at San Diego Comic-Con that Peter J. Tomasi is going to be returning to Batman as the regular writer for Detective. So I was really hoping that was going to go to Brian Edward Hill. But keep picking up Detective for sure and tell everybody you know to pick it up. tweet at DC that we want more Brian Edward Hill on Batman, because who knows what could happen. The plans could change, right? Also, Doomsday Clock number 6 from Geoff Johns and Gary Frank. Hellblazer number 24, as we're winding down that series, also comes out. Speaking of winding down series, Mira, Queen of Atlantis number 6 by Dan Abnett is out today as well. Silencer number 7, also from Abnett, with art by John Romita Jr. And we've also got Wonder Woman number 51. And the regular cover is a really sweet cover by Art Germ, so you definitely want to check that out if you're a fan of his art. Over at IDW, Joe Hill's The Cape Fallen number 2 continues the story of the Cape. I covered number 1. Again, this is kind of a flashback. The Cape, the second, I think there were 2 miniseries of The Cape, and the second one kind of ended the story. It wrapped it all up. The Cape Fallen 2 kind of takes place in between a couple of the issues of one of the miniseries. So it's definitely a flashback. It's not like a reboot or anything like that. Over at Image, we've got Hit Girl number 6. Moonshine number 12 from Eduardo Risso and Brian Azzarello. We've got New World 1 from... oh my god, I'm totally drawing a blank. From Ailish Cott. No. Yeah. Ailish Cott and Trad Moore. That's who it is. And the Shanghai Red number 2 that I mentioned before. From Marvel, Amazing Spider-Man number 2 from Nick Spencer and Ryan Otley. Avengers is up to number 2 for a third printing and number 3 for a second printing. So if you're behind on your Avengers, there's a couple of new printings coming out tomorrow. We've got The Hunt for Wolverine, Mystery in Madripoor number 3. We'll be talking about on next Tuesday's Hunt for Wolverine. Infinity Wars Prime number 1. We've had the countdown for Infinity that hasn't been doing too well from what I understand, but I guess we'll see if people have been waiting for the main series, because the first issue comes out tomorrow. We've got Mr. and Mrs. X number 1. We now know that to be the book starring Gambit and Rogue, now that they're married. Also from Marvel, we have Sentry number 2 from writer Jeff Lemire. And there's a new Thor number 1 second printing. There's a Wakanda Forever X-Men number 1. X-23 has issue 2 come out tomorrow. And there is a X-Men Grand Design Second Genesis number 1 from Ed Piskor. I know the first X-Men Grand Design sold out in minutes everywhere. So if you're a fan of Ed Piskor and kind of the way he's telling his personal history of the X-Men, definitely want to pick that up pretty early. And then lastly, from Valiant, we've got 3 titles coming out. We've got Britannia Lost Eagles of Rome number 1, Harbinger Wars 2 number 3, and Exo Manowar 17. So those are the books I think you should have your eyes out for if you make it to the comic shop tomorrow. A lot of really, really good stuff, especially from DC with Detective Comics and Hal Jordan. Doomsday Clock. I mean, just a lot of really, really good stuff. So make sure you get out there to your comic shop, support your local retailer. And as always, I want to thank everyone for joining us. Please rate us on whatever you listen to, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, the app you use on your phone. Subscribing to us, telling your friends about us, rating us, especially 5-star ratings on iTunes. All that stuff really helps with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, be sure to check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. And now that San Diego Comic-Con is in the rearview mirror, next show we will be covering is Palm Springs Comic-Con in Palm Springs, California. So look for us there if you're in Southern California and plan on being at the show. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.